Good morning and welcome to Storylines on the Bay 88.7 FM. I'm your host, Christine Cowley, and today we're speaking with Kate Hilton about her latest novel, Just Like Family. Welcome, Kate.
Thanks so much for having me, Christine.
Kate, the protagonist of Just Like Family, Avery Graham, is a woman of the having it all generation. Tell us a little bit of the storyline of Just Like Family.
Just Like Family follows a period of intense transformation of Avery Graham, who's the chief of staff at Toronto City Hall. She is the right-hand staffer for a very charismatic, very well-liked mayor named Peter Haynes. And she is also the partner in a long-term relationship with a gentleman named Matt, who's a very lovely man and who proposes to her at the beginning of the book. And so Avery, at the moment that the book begins, is working on a waterfront development project in Toronto, which is, you know, as with all large city projects, is complicated. And so is very occupied in her work life. And at the same time is suddenly thrown this big personal decision that causes her to sit back and reflect on whether she wants to move forward in her relationship with Matt. And if not, why that might be. And it causes her to reflect deeply on a whole lot of other relationships in her life that may or may not be working as they should be.
And you give us a metaphor at the very beginning of the book of a sweater unraveling, and it's so apt. And you know, I almost wore my sweater today because I could see that particular sweater that's in my closet, that sweater that has the pulled thread. But you take us through how this has happened to Avery. And your writing style is very entertaining and often is laugh out loud funny, as with the sweater.
Thank you.
But there's a price to pay for laughing, because like all great humorists, there's a message in there that really takes hold, or you know, maybe kind of hits us between the eyes every once in a while. So you've delivered some very deep philosophy through humor. And I marked probably a dozen passages that did that, but I'm going to share just a couple.
Sure.
So actually, this excerpt covers a couple of pages, so I'm going to paraphrase a little bit. So one of the profound truths that you verbalize for us is, we don't understand memory at all. We believe that shared memories bind us together when in fact they are the worm in the apple. Our own past is mysterious. You move further away each day from the reasons you took this path or that one, and you're left with only the story you've told yourself. That is a very powerful message. Could you expand on that just a little bit?
Sure. So there are a few things embedded in that paragraph of the book. And, you know, I'm probably still myself trying to figure some of them out, but let me take a stab at it. So in the context of this book, I like to play with time in my book. So both of my books do this. This one, Just Like Family in particular, I really went to town on the time shifting. So every chapter leaps past to present. So you spend one chapter in the present, you spend one chapter in the past, and the purpose of that narrative vehicle, if you'll allow me, is to dredge up some of the experiences of Avery's life that have influenced why it is that she's in a particular way blocked in the present. So I'm interested in sort of psychological novels where you come to understand your protagonist more deeply as the novel goes on and more layers are revealed. And I like the metaphor of the onion and peeling back all of the layers. And one of the ways that I like to do that in my fiction is to show you a whole lot of the sort of the underneath layers, the layers from the past that have made this person who she is, and that explain a little bit why what for someone might be a very easy decision, for example, marrying a long-term partner who is a very nice fellow, why that decision is not simple for this moment. And so the comments about memory, I think, are lifted out of that context, are that I think as humans, that sort of the push toward a narrative explanation of who we are and why are we here in a particular geography, in a particular psychological landscape, I think that that is a very human impulse, and that we see, of course, we see it very evidently in oral societies, but I think that we actually are just as drawn to it in written and digital societies, but we are just sort of less, I think, attuned to the fact that we're obsessed with writing our own narratives. And so I think that in particular, the stories that we tell about ourselves to ourselves and which harden in the telling to other people, yes. right? So when we meet people and we explain who we are and what we do and, you know, the story of how I did this or that, we're constantly reinforcing these stories that we tell about ourselves. And then it actually becomes quite difficult to unpack them. Mm. So particularly in midlife, which is a stage of life that I write a lot about and I'm interested in thinking about both fictionally and non-fictionally, I think it's a moment where some of these narratives can start to unravel, which is to say life events may occur that cause us to, we may lose a parent or a friend, we may experience illness, we may experience divorce, we may struggle with issues with our children. It's a, like profound transformative life events that often occur in these years of life that actually cause us to think, well, you know, my own reaction to this event doesn't tee up with the story I've always told myself about myself, or this event that's occurred in my family doesn't gel with this story I've always told about the way my family interacts with itself. And so I think midlife is a moment where these very foundational narratives that have carried us up to this point in life sometimes can start to fray. Mm. And that's a moment that I'm trying to capture in Just Like Family.
And you also show it to us as an opportunity, because it becomes an opportunity. Avery realizes this through the novel, that there are actually opportunities to heal.
Without question. I think narratives about ourselves are very important, because they give us, you know, identity is an important way in which we make our understanding of our identity, that's an important way in which we make decisions. We make life decisions. We choose careers. We choose partners. We decide whether certain situations are comfortable for us or not, based on who we think we are, right? But those narratives can also constrain us from taking risks, from exploring things that we ought to explore in life. One of the, you know, I think most destructive narratives that I hear so many people utter all the time is, I'm not a very creative person, right? I don't have any creative talents. In fact, my own belief is that all humans have creative talents. But this self-talk about how we are not ourselves a creative person prevents us from ever taking any exploratory risks in any creative endeavor, which I think is a very stifling box to put oneself in and really cheats us out of, you know, the great pleasures of creative expression.
Yeah.
So those are just some examples of things that I see people say about themselves and that they clearly believe to be true and that have maybe been reinforced by other people. And so on, and it becomes a very hardened perspective that, you know, that I think can be sadly limiting.
So we have an opportunity to re-examine and say, maybe I want to go on this path and explore that a bit. And failure is not the worst thing to have happen.
No. And in fact, I have at various times in my life been quite perfectionistic, and failure would have been a very dirty word for me at various times in my life. And I mean, who likes failure? No one loves it. But I've actually really come to have a much more nuanced relationship to failure, because my own view is that some percentage of any endeavor will fail. And if you're failing at nothing, you're taking no risks. Mm. And I mean, it's sort of, these have become trite things to say kind of in the self-help field, but it is in fact true. And I say from experience as a creative writer that had I been paralyzed by my fear of failure, I would certainly never have written the book. You know, these are very frightening projects to embark on.
And you put yourself out there in the world.
Deeply.
Yeah. So everybody's going to see you fail horribly, right? Now, some of the similarities to Avery's life and your own are, for instance, she studied law, but is not practicing law. And I found some of these similarities would have been tempting to believe you were writing from your own life, but it's really quite obvious in the things that have happened to Avery that it is not. But you managed to slip in a very subtle way, some of your, again, your life philosophy. And one of those excerpts I want to share with our listeners is, you have Avery say at one point, the only thing that got me through law school were the stories. I want to do something useful with my life. I want to engage with the world. And so that comes back to what you're saying about jumping off and trying that creative, scary, scary thing. Mm-hmm. And what would have happened if you had? We wouldn't have just like family. Right. And
or the hole in the middle.
Yes.
So yes, Avery is a character who bears very little relation to me personally, mm-hmm. but I like her deeply. She was fun to write. She's someone I was very happy to spend a lot of time with. So there are a couple of experiences that I had that I gave to Avery, partly because they were interesting experiences for me, and because I wanted her as a character to have those experiences and to grow in whatever way she needed mm-hmm. to grow. But sometimes when, as a writer, you've had particular experiences, it's not that you want to write your own journey with those experiences into your book, but you know those experiences so yes. well, and you think to yourself, well, now that would be an interesting thing to have happen to this character. I wonder how she would deal with that, given who she is.
Yeah. You're listening to Storylines on the Bay, 88.7 FM. I'm your host, Christine Cowley. Today, we are enjoying a conversation with Kate Hilton. We're talking about Just Like Family, her latest novel. We're going to take a short break to hear from our sponsors. Kate, when we come back, I want to ask you about the Pen Pal Project, which is a really fascinating piece of some of the things you do. So stay with us. Listen. Listeners, we'll be right back with Kate Hilton. Welcome back to Storylines on the Bay, 88.7 FM. I'm your host, Christine Cowley. Today, we're really enjoying our conversation with Kate Hilton, who's just given us a new novel, Just Like Family. Kate, before the break, I said we were going to talk about something else you do, which totally fascinated me when I went onto your website and found the Pen Pal Project. Tell us about the Pen Pal Project.
I love the Pen Pal Project. I'm so glad you're asking me about it. It's one of my favorite things that I do. So the Pen Pal Project is a collaboration between two writers, me and my very good friend Reva Seth, who is a nonfiction writer, best known for a book called The Mom Shift, which talked about the lives and complications and logistics attached to working motherhood. Reva and I had been talking for some time about collaborating on a project together, and the shape of that project was something that we debated for a couple of years. And then one day we just realized that what we wanted to do was to capture some of the conversations we were having. So we were both around 40 and wanting to talk in a more open and theoretical way about the experience of women at midlife. And Reva's background is different from mine. Reva's parents are from India, and she has a different sort of family structure yes. and some different experiences than I've had. And yet we found that we had these incredibly common experiences together of midlife frustration, midlife restlessness, midlife dissatisfaction that actually gave us something deeply common that we wanted to talk about. And so what we decided to do was to write letters to each other. We had both had pen pals as children, mm-hmm. and we decided that what we wanted to do was to write. It initially started that we were both responsible for a letter every 2 weeks. So a letter would pass back and forth every week, but we would alternate. And the letters would be very candid accounts of what was happening in our life in the context of these sort of midlife questions. Mm-hmm. And so for a year, we did a very intensive correspondence. And then in year two, because we'd both moved on to, like, I was in the middle of Just Like Family in a very intense way, mm-hmm. and I couldn't write to her as frequently. And she also was in the middle of a giant work project. And so we decided we would move to a model where we were writing less frequently, but that we would keep the project alive. And it sort of gathered a little bit of a following. Mm-hmm. And
it's easy to understand that when you yeah. read through some of the letters.
Of all the things that I do when I'm out, you know, at events and so on, it's often the Pen Pal Project that people will come and talk to me about. And even though it doesn't have massive numbers of followers, it seems that there are lots of people who keep track of it because yes. I get asked about it a lot. And it's been a very important project for me as a writer because I came to it when I was struggling a little bit with how to begin this book, my second book. Second novels are notoriously challenging for writers, particularly after a success. Yeah. There are a lot of failed second novels out there. And so the pressure to deliver on a second novel can be quite paralyzing. Yes. And I was feeling that pressure. And then also I'd had a marital breakdown and some other things. So I was feeling my confidence was low. Mm. And there was something about this writing space, and I had never written memoir or nonfiction before, I found it very freeing. Mm. And I think Reva also did. And it brought me back to the writing desk, and it kind of opened the door for me to begin really working seriously on this second book. And I do give it a lot of credit for having brought me back to a place that I needed to be creatively. And in fact, when I did my book launch for this book, I thanked Reva publicly for being the person who brought me back to the desk.
Now that you say that, it occurs to me that some of the touch points, the emotional touch points in Just Like Family, may have come through those struggles that you've just described. And I'm just putting that together, because there were some really powerful touch points. I would say, I don't want to give out any spoilers, but there is a crisis in the novel, let us say, that I've read about many times over the years, but your treatment of it just hit me between the eyes in a way that I've never experienced before. And I will always remember that.
So moved to hear you say that. Thank you. It's a beautiful compliment for a writer to receive, truly.
And it's absolutely true. And now that I hear you say that you were going through these things in your personal life, well, that just, it layers it with something else again. So as readers, we're consuming the novel, and then we have opportunities to actually talk to you and to hear what you were going through when you were writing this. It's such a rich experience to share that.
Yeah. Well, thank you. And I always find that too myself when I talk to other writers and hear, you know, I have the luxury now of knowing lots of writers, and when I read their work, I am so conscious, not so much of their own lives reflected in their books, because very few of us actually write about ourselves in our books, but you can hear the voice of the person that you know, the things that they are concerned about, the things that they are wrestling with. And also you can read certain emotional states out of the books.
Yes.
And sometimes it's just that you know that you're looking for them, and maybe we're reading in that sense. But certainly in my own case, I wrote this book during a time that was very difficult for me personally. And I was wrestling with some big questions about loyalty and I think how we invest our energies and our kind of our spirit, like where we, what parts of our lives most deserve our deepest attention and concentration and focus. And I was reinventing myself during that period. And so although Avery is having a very different journey than the one I was having, she too is struggling with a set of questions that relate, you know, not indirectly to those kinds of things. Yes.
And I don't want to steer our listeners wrong. This is, it's a great read. But when I started to read Just Like Family, I was thinking, oh, this is nice. This is nice light reading. I'll take it down to the dock. I can read
it's
there.
Fun. With a glass. It's pacey. It's you can read fun. It in a couple of days. It's, this is what
and,
everyone
and
tells
I did,
me. Yes.
And in fact, I did read it in a day, but not because it was light and airy and, you know, I could sit there and drink my glass of wine. It's because it was so riveting. It was just, drew me page after. I just had to keep reading. And it just is so delighted me to be able to laugh at the same time that big things were happening inside, because I was relating to some of Avery's struggles and discoveries about herself. Right. And it's a tantalizing kind of line you put out there that, you know, these best friends are hanging out in the summer and they're swimming and they're doing all the summer things.
Right.
And so you get into the novel thinking that's what you're going to read about. And then, wow, it really packs punch after punch about midlife and deciding, you know, what do I want to do for the rest of my life? And these are big decisions I have to make.
Right.
So it's deceptively fun. It is fun, but there's so much depth here. So
thank you. I'm so happy you've received it in the spirit in which it was created. And I think it's true of both my books, and it'll certainly be true of my third book as well. So I guess I have a style. But I think they're books that work on a bunch of different levels. So if you just want to kick back and read it on the dock and just have fun with the humor and enjoy the characters, then
you can
you'll,
do that.
You can do that.
Absolutely.
And you'll enjoy the book. Just fine. fine and it'll still work for you because it's satisfying.
It's so entertaining.
And it's entertaining and it'll work for you. But if you want to think a little bit more deeply about some of the things I'm throwing out there, if you want to pick up what I'm putting down, you can. And you can have a different experience mm-hmm. with the book. And so, and I like that about the books, and I write them that way because yeah. I want people to be able to have a deeper experience with the book if they want to, but they don't have to because it is intended as entertainment. And I do regard that as part of my job. That is part of the task that I'm setting myself as a writer in relation to you as my reader, is that I want you to have fun
yes.
when you're hanging out with me.
Yes.
Right.
And you know, what also occurs to me, because I don't know if all our listeners save their books like I do, but I do save my favorite books, but you could come back to this in 10 years and have a whole different experience.
That's right. You
yeah.
could.
Yeah.
And now when I look at my first book, I engage in it in a different mm-hmm. way. Because I have I'm past it a few years, and my sense of the issues that are percolating in book number one are a little bit more refined now.
You know? Now, you also said you've got book number three in the works. Can
yes,
you tell us just a little bit?
So book number three is a divorce comedy called Better Luck Next Time, and it is sold. So it will come out in Canada and in the US sometime in 2019, I think. And it's due at the end of this year. So I'm in
pressure's
it.
On.
The pressure's on, but that's okay because I've got it figured out. And it does have some characters that are coming back from book one. Some well-loved characters from book one will make an appearance in book three. And yeah, so I'm really enjoying it, actually.
Oh, good. And so the trauma that you experienced through some of the writing of yeah. Just Like Family, you're not having in the third novel because the pressure's off.
Totally. So in terms of the performance anxiety, so to speak, that is much alleviated now. I feel quite sort of liberated from the anvil of pressure that I did feel trying to get started with book two, for sure.
You're listening to Storylines on the Bay 88.7 FM. Today we are speaking with Kate Hilden about her latest novel, Just Like Family. Kate, thank you so much for joining us. And I know our listeners will want to go to your website and read more about what you're doing and what's coming up. Could you give us your website address?
I'm at www.katehilton.com.
Nice and easy.
Very easy to find me, and always love hearing from readers. And it's easy to find me on all social media platforms. And so, yeah, look for me, and happy to hear from you.
Thanks so much, Kate, for being with us this morning.
It was a delight. Thank you.
You've been listening to Storylines on the Bay 88.7 FM. I'm Christine Cowley, talking to authors and book folks about books and the writing life. Thanks so much for tuning in. We hope you'll join us again.